to the Sutta class for this week on the Bhadali Sutta Majjhima Nikaya number 65. Okay, so this particular sutta is concerning a topic dear to all of our hearts, which is why, oh why, can't we eat dinner? Actually, a few suttas talk about this. It's quite interesting. Obviously, there's a bit of an issue. And there's another sutta a bit later on in the Majjhima Nikaya, the Kita Giri Sutta, which has a similar introduction, and also about a similar kind of issue. Now, this particular discourse has one parallel version in the Majjhima Agama, Majjhima Agama 194. The Majjhima Agama, of course, being a collection of the Vasivadins, very good, and a partial parallel in the Ekotara Agama of the. Is that right? Alright. Okay, let's go. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's path. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, venerable sir," they replied, the Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, I eat at a single session. By so doing, I am free from illness and affliction, and I enjoy lightness, strength, and a comfortable abiding. Come, bhikkhus, eat at a single session. By so doing, you too will be free from illness and affliction, and you will enjoy lightness, strength, and a comfortable abiding." Right. So the Buddha said here, eating at a single session, ekasana bhojanam bhunjami. So I eat a food, bhojana. I feed on food at one seat. Eka, one, asana. Seat. One seat food feed. I feed on one seat food. Okay. And so, what does that mean exactly?
I heard about that, does that? Not all day, but he sits there for like an hour or 2 hours
uh-huh.
And just eats and eats and eats.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the Dhamma practice. So, ekasana bhojanam bhunjami.
Isn't this one later taken up to be an ascetic practice, which is not included in the Dhammas?
Isn't it? Ekasana? I think it is in the Dhyanga.
It's one of the 13
Dhyangas.
Yeah. But the original Dhyangas don't have 13.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Maybe not, yeah. So, eating at one seating, he says, so he doesn't say eat at one seating in order to torment yourself. He doesn't say do it to force yourself to be sick because being sick is good for Dhamma practice. He says, "Why doing that, I am free. I have little illness. I perceive little illness. Apatankatancha." It's not such a common word. I am free from illness and affliction. Lahutanancha. And I am light. I'm light. And strong. And live in comfort. So you two eat. In the same way. Well, it's interesting in Cuba in the 1990s, thanks to James's New Scientist, they just showed that when they had a famine during the 90s because of the collapse of the communist realm, and they had a famine in Cuba and people had very little to eat and they became very skinny, but many, many major diseases dropped off. I can't remember what they were now, heart diseases and all kinds of things. So they actually became much healthier. Yeah. And they've also, I think, shown the same thing with rats, is if you give rats all that they can eat, whatever they want, they'll get fat and so on, but if you give them only much, you know, less than they need, less than they want, then they'll be much healthier.
So I guess,
and live longer, yeah. And I guess it's basically just an evolutionary thing, isn't it? That you know, in the wild you can't always get what you want when you want, so you've got to take it and store it. And so you have a kind of a greater capacity to take food rather than more than you can store it. So I think it's quite a reasonable suggestion. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
If there's work being done currently, I mean, the obesity of the population in general is bringing this sort of focus, and there's strong work coming out to suggest that to have less of what we appear to require in the number of calories or kilojoules per day exactly oppose those lines.
And it's by doing so that he has health. Isn't it, shouldn't he? You just do it, and if you're sick, then you keep doing it.
Obviously, yeah.
So, like in the case of
Satyadharma or something? So yeah, obviously it doesn't apply if it makes you sick. Some people obviously it doesn't, so it doesn't apply to everyone.
According to Ayurveda, there are different constitutions. Some people have a light build, light constitution, and they are required to eat several times a day. And there are people that they can happily just have one meal. So I know that some monks have really struggle with them on the
Yeah, Jhantanya practices are meant to specifically target defilements, not to make you have more defilements or make you sick.
Yeah. Okay. When he said this, the Venerable Bhadali told the Blessed One, "Venerable Sir, I am not willing to eat at a single session, for if I were to do so, I might have worry and anxiety about it." Okay, so I personally think Bhadali is terrific. Why is Bhadali terrific? Because he's honest. He's straight down the line. He says, "You want me to do it? I'm not going to do it. Because I don't want him." I think that's very praiseworthy. Well, the honesty and the straightforwardness is praiseworthy. Ekasana bodhinang hime bhante bunjato siya kukuchang. There could be kukuchang. Yeah, vipatisara. That could be remorse, anxiety, vipatisara. Then, so it's been since a slightly curious thing to say, though, doesn't it? I mean, normally you say, well, I don't want to eat because I might feel sick, or I might feel, you know, hungry, or something like that. But to say I'm not going to do it because I might feel worried, what do you think you might be worried about?
Dying of starvation.
He's going to die of starvation before he reaches the next day.
Yeah.
Maybe he's been.
I could do that. I've done that.
Yeah.
I've been on retreat. Yeah.
What? Died of starvation?
No, not died, but had that thought. If the food's as bad as today, and I have to miss out on another meal, and I don't get anything at tea time, then I must probably die tomorrow.
Right.
I've been through that.
Yeah.
Day after day.
Okay.
So he could be worried about that.
Yeah.
My issue is about food and health, bodily health really, mostly, and the next issue that this other gentleman is talking about is not addressing that question at all. His own internal stuff.
Yeah.
When you fast, like after a few days, you do go a bit
out. You do, yeah. You start to obsess about food and things.
Can you just get really happy?
Yeah. People have very different reactions on practice. Or even I've had very different reactions on different occasions, but yeah, you can have. But that's usually, as you say, after a few days rather than just after missing an evening meal. Anyway, interesting, kind of provokes that kind of reaction. Certainly his honesty is praiseworthy, but I don't know if he's... Anyway, and the Buddha says, therefore, Badali, wherever you're invited, then you should have one part, you should having eaten one part, and having taken one part back, you should eat that. Okay, so this refers to, for example, if you go into the village for alms, and then they give some alms food for you there, then you can take a certain portion of it there, and then come back to the monastery and have the rest of it. So it's basically like having, often they might give some konje or something like that to have in the village. So it's a kind of a two meal a day practice. Yeah, hope springs eternal. No, it just says where, it doesn't say anything about the time period there, it just says when you're bringing it back. Bit of wiggle room there. Yeah, I'm just saying whether that's actually the timing thing is talked about. The timing precept, the timing thing is talked about it in another sutta, in the Kitagiri Sutta. Is it? Anyway, let's see. Let's. According to the commentary, Badali's worry was whether under such conditions he would be able to live as a monk for the whole of his life. So maybe that's right. According to the Ekotara Agama version, however, he simply objected that by undertaking this practice he would become weak. So that seems perhaps a little bit more obvious anyway. Okay. And then all three versions agree that he did not accept the Buddha's compromise suggestion. Venerable sir, I am not willing to eat in that way either, for if I were to do so, I might also have worry and anxiety about it. Then, when this training precept was being made known by the Blessed One, when the Sangha of Bhikkhus was undertaking the training, the Venerable Badali declared his refusal to comply. Then the Venerable Badali did not present himself to the Blessed One for the whole of that 3 month period, as happens with one who does not fulfill the training in the Blessed One, in the teacher's dispensation. Okay, so, and here the word for the training rule. So it's kind of, Okay, so then here's his refusal, and then the Venerable Badali, Bhagavata sikkhapade panyapi amane. So, when the training rule was being laid down, okay, this is the training rule, sikkhapada. So this means specifically the Vinaya rule. So here it seems to jump over a little bit to where the Vinaya rule is being laid down, and of course being the Vinaya rule about eating in the afternoon. And he said that he would not keep it. He would not train in that. And this, of course, being the present passive participle in locative case there, which we might be lucky enough to look at in our Pali class on these weeks. Okay, but anyway, the point to notice here is the word sikkhapada is the word for the training rule. Yeah? Okay, now, on that occasion, a number of bhikkhus were engaged in making up a robe for the Blessed One, thinking with this robe completed at the end of the 3 months of the rains, the Blessed One will set out wandering. Then the Venerable Bhadali went to those bhikkhus and exchanged greetings with them, and when this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side. When he'd done so, they said to him, "Friend Bhadali, this robe is being made up for the Blessed One. With his robe completed at the end of the 3 months of the rains, the Blessed One will set out wandering. Please, friend Bhadali, give proper attention to this advice. Do not let it become more difficult for you later on." Okay, so here they are making, obviously, the katina robe for for the Buddha. And Indha also, come, friend Badali. Please pay good attention. Ma te pacha dukkaratarang. Dukkaratarang ahosi. Okay, so don't make it more difficult for you later on. And this construction here in Pali, the tara construction here, this is actually cognate with the English construction as in greater or lesser or something like that. It makes it more than. And actually it's just the construction, is the tara without the T and the A.
Is that an augment?
No, it's not an augment, I'm afraid. But here's one. Here's an augment for you. Ahosi. There's a little augment sitting there. You can see it. Alrighty? Okay. Yes, friends. He replied, he went to the Blessed One after paying homage to him. He sat down on one side and said, Venerable Sir, a transgression overcame me in that like a fool, blundering and confused, when a training precept was made known by the Blessed One, when the Sangha of Bhikkhus was undertaking the training, I declared my refusal to comply. Venerable Sir, may the Blessed One forgive my transgression, seen as such, for the sake of restraint in the future. Surely, Badali, a transgression overcame you, and that like a fool, confused and blundering, when a training precept was made known by me, when the Sangha of Bhikkhus was undertaking the training, you declared your refusal to comply. Badali, this circumstance was not recognized by you. The Blessed One is living at Savatthi, and the Blessed One will know me thus. The Bhikkhu named Badali is one who does not fulfill the training in the teacher's dispensation. This circumstance was not recognized by you. Also, this circumstance was not recognized by you. Many bhikkhus have taken up residence at Savatthi for the rains, and they too will know me as one who does not fulfill the training. And many bhikkhunis have taken up residence at Savatthi for the rains, and they too will know me thus. The bhikkhu named Badali is one who does not fulfill the training. Many lay men followers and lay women followers will also recognize Badali as one who is not fulfilling the training. And many recluses and Brahmins of other sects have taken up residence in Savatthi for the rains, and they too will know me thus. The bhikkhu named Badali, an elder disciple of the recluse Gotama, is one who does not fulfill the training in the teacher's dispensation. Okay, so interesting. It puts the elder in there.
How could he have done it for 3 whole months?
Yeah, well, he's obviously very naughty.
3 whole months without anyone reprimanding or saying.
Yeah, well, they're pretty, you know, pretty easy going. I mean, it's a nice thing to reflect about, yeah. And it actually says that elsewhere. It's quite explicitly says that in the Vinaya, that one should not be overly quick to admonish or to tell people off. That you know, especially if they're wavering in faith, that you should be very gentle in telling them off or admonishing them, and do so slowly rather than quickly. Yeah? It's a very good thing to remember.
Because it works out in the end.
Often it does work out in the end, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't, but often it does, yeah. It's always good to have some patience and let people give the chance to. Sometimes you just have to kind of work off a bit of stubbornness or something like that. All right. Okay, now, at this point, the Ekottara Agama version differs. The Majjhima Agama version is mainly the same as the Pali. The Ekottara Agama version goes off in a slightly different and somewhat intriguing little direction et here. The Ekottara Agama version then continues with the Buddha. Instead of all that bit we've just had there about saying that the monks and nuns and so on will know that you haven't been keeping the rules, instead that it says that the Buddha gave an exhortation in prose and in verse, and then recommended Badali to develop contentment. Fair enough. Ardali then retired into seclusion for intensive practice and became an arahant. After which, the Buddha declared him to be foremost among his disciples who eats a lot. So, this category of being the foremost, I wonder if that's something that you make an avitama in your past life.
Past lives.
Bow at the feet of Kassapa Buddha and say, oh, in time of the future Buddha, I want to be the, here's the Chinese. I am. Right, so, yes, wrong footnote there.
This is undertaken by all past Buddhas. So all these past Buddhas, they had similar training, advice, and...
Hang on, let me check this.
...the Sangha and everything.
It's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That is Buddha reason 3 times. Each time, Badali repeated 3 times. It goes right there. An account of how on another occasion the monk Udayi had gone begging in a rainy night and so startled a pregnant woman that she lost her embryo. It's a similar story. Majumo, yeah, a bit different, now that she's pregnant. This accident caused people to criticize the Buddhist monks. On hearing which, the Buddha called all the monks together and recommended eating only once as a practice undertaken by all past Buddhas, and as conducive to the gain of concentration and insight into the Four Noble Truths. This part of the Akotara concludes with the Buddha recommending some of the ascetic practices and praising Mahakasapa's conduct. Okay? After which it returns to the events concerning Bhadali, and then praises Bhadali for eating a lot. So, I mean, it's quite likely it was practice undertaken by all the past Buddhas. Eating just once, I would think, that sounds reasonable to me. But also the Ekotra argument is pretty out there, I have to say. With all my best wishes to try to embrace a fully non-partisan attitude towards the arguments and things, but the Ekotra is funky.
Did all the past Buddhas have a similar way of trying to share so that other people gain respect for the truth by establishing a Sangha and vineyard rules and training rules and all this?
They would set up a Sangha. I mean, that's why they're Buddhas rather than Pacheka Buddhas. Yeah? Mm-hmm. But sometimes they would have Parimokkhas or sometimes they wouldn't. So there'd always be a vineyard in more general sense of like a code of conduct. But that might not be formulated in terms of a specific kind of legal structure.
So it's because of that that their teaching doesn't last long.
Yeah.
It gives more faith in the training, knowing that it's not only this Buddha, but it's been done over and over and over again.
Okay. Where are we? And then Bhadali confesses again, and the Buddha admonishes him again, and then the Buddha says, "What do you think, Bhadali?" Okay, what do you think, Bhadali? Suppose a bhikkhu here were one liberated in both ways. Ubato bhaga vimuto. And I said to him, "Come, bhikkhu, be a plank for me across the mud." Ehime tuang bhikkhu panke sankamo hohi. Would he walk across himself, or would he dispose his body otherwise, or would he say no? No, blessed one. Okay. So, obviously this is not the kind of thing that the Buddha actually did, right? This did not happen, right? But this is a hypothetical situation. What's an ubato bhaga vimuto?
Someone liberated in samadhi and wisdom.
Don't all Arahants have to be liberated in Samadhi and wisdom? Form spheres? Formless spheres. Yeah. The Ubuddha Bhagavimutti is supposed to have the formless attainments to the highest degree, so that they can get into whatever they want, whenever they want, wherever they want, for however long as they want. Sounds pretty good, isn't it? Yeah. And as well as that, they're completely liberated by wisdom. So this is the Ubuddho Bhaga Vimutto. So it's complete perfection of both samadhi and wisdom. It's a kind of arahant. Panya Vimutto. Of course, is an arahant who doesn't have jhanas.
Well, with all that, he wouldn't be a plank for Buddha to walk across, I don't believe it.
Okay.
You got it wrong, Eva.
Eva?
What have I got wrong?
Who would be a plank?
Badali.
Uh-huh.
Buddha asked him, would he be a plank, and he said no.
He said no?
They didn't ask him if he would be a plank.
No.
Yeah, he said no.
He said no. The Buddha said, if someone was an Ubuddha Bhagavimutta, would he refuse? And Badali says no.
The answer is
about
refusal. He won't
say no.
Someone
who is an
arahant
wouldn't say no to
being
a plank.
Of course, I wouldn't think he'd say no.
Yeah. You get it?
Read the question again. But
I did many times, and I asked Bhante about it a couple of years ago, and you said no, he wouldn't be a plank.
Who?
And I said, would you be a plank? And you said yes. And I said, I would too. I remember.
Okay, well, let's clear up that little one. Anyway, the Panya Vimutti is the arahant without jhanas, right or wrong?
Wrong.
Why is it wrong? You think you know better than the whole Theravada commentary tradition?
Isn't that just like they have both samadhi and wisdom? But I don't know anything. But Panya is just like a bit more. Like they have both, but like the faith and wisdom that they have both, but that's a bit more. Is that how it works?
Something along that general kind of line, yeah. They're not necessarily as fluent in the formless attainments in particular. So all the arahants would have the four form jhanas, but they may or may not have the formless attainments.
May or may not.
May or may not, yes.
And there are arahants.
And there are arahants.
Sort of a lower level arahant.
Kinda, yeah. But all the arahants are pretty high level, relatively speaking, yeah. But if you've got to distinguish between them, then yeah. Is that right? Okay, next one. Akaya Sakhi.
Body witness.
What's a body witness? Come on. Body witness, come on.
The elements and all that?
No, nothing to do with the elements and all that. Completely on the wrong track. Totally mistaken. Another ballpark. Come on. Kaya Sakhi. Nothing to do with mindfulness of the body.
What about weakness?
Witness, sa, meaning one's own. Occhi, the same as the Italian occhi. In English, ocular. Sa occhi, with one's own eyes.
Well, that must be it, eh?
weakness. Then the body of Dhamma is one for nine.
No? No one's going to come up with a clever answer? No one's even going to come up with a dumb answer?
Did you read the whole sentence?
What's the bit before?
Tell you what's the bit before. It's the same as all the rest of them. So suppose a bhikkhu were a body witness and I said, God, lie down in the mud. Would he refuse? No. Okay, Kayasaki. Here, some person contacts with the body and abides in those liberations that are peaceful and immaterial, transcending forms. And some of his defilements are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom.
It's a non-returner.
Doesn't have to be a non-returner. Yeah, some kind of Aryan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some kind of Aryan who's liberated by mostly by samadhi.
Yeah, samadhi in the formless. Yeah. So they have formless attainments, and some of they have some Aryan attainments, but they're not yet an arahant. Right. They had the full Monty. Then they would be an Ubhuto Bhaga Vimutto. Alright?
What is the definition from that sutta again? Was it, could you read it out?
Mm-hmm. Here, some person contacts with the body and abides in those liberations that are peaceful and immaterial, transcending forms, and some of his taints are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom.
We have never met this word like that.
Mm. We will again though in the Kita Giri Sutta, which has a lot in common with our current sutta, yeah. Just in a few weeks. Then we will know. Well, we could also know now as well.
Well, yes. And then recall it.
Yeah. That would be good, then we might remember. Yeah?
And if we weren't knowing it now, we would be worse off later.
We would be, yeah. We'd be worse off now and worse off later.
Is this the same kind of kaya that they talk about in the Dhamma formula?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So here's the meaning of kaya, which doesn't mean
body,
obviously, but it means, because it's talking about formless realms, that it has some kind of meaning of like a direct personal experience of something. That's why you have this kaya saki. Yeah? It's an idiom. So sometimes it's rendered as personally. Yeah, so personally, a personal witness, or one personally witnessed these things. So it means you've directly seen it, and it literally embodied that particular thing. So this is why when you see the use of the word body in jhana formulas, formless jhana formulas, even talks about nibbana being contacted with the body, obviously doesn't mean the physical body. So here has a more subtle meaning.
And the word kaya means personally, so the
way
kind of have two meanings,
it has
body as in physical body,
mm.
and personal experience, is that?
Yeah, something like that. It has many different meanings. But the thing in meditation is it tends to go from one to the other, sort of with an almost imperceptible shift, sort of it's almost like you're going, it fits meditation experience very well, because you actually go inside the body. You start out like with the breath or something like that, where you're actually watching some kind of physical thing, and the more you go along, the more you go inside that thing. So you're actually seeing the transformation of those things.
And then the kaya word means ending. It's spelled differently, right?
That's a completely different word. I'm glad you brought that up now that you mention it. I'd just like to have a little test here. Kaya. And right, let's just make sure of this. I don't want to mess around here. Kaya. Okay? Now
does not equal destruction.
Equals what?
Ending.
Ending. Is it like Nibbana Kaya? Can be, yeah. Kayam viraga namatang parnitam yadadhaga sakyumani samahito.
Wow.
Nate na dhamme. And Kaya meaning.
Body?
Just do it all again.
Personal experience? Or can mean a conglomerate? Something like that? Good, huh?
Tell you all that again, Bhante, that you were doing. Sort of like a poem.
It was a poem. It's on the roughness of that.
Well,
say. Kayang viragam yamatang panitam yada jaga sakinami samahito.
In English? See, I get rapture.
Nathena kamena samatha pinchi idampi dhamme. Okay, next one. Dipipato. Dipipato. Sorry?
Liberated by view, is that right?
Liberated by view.
No, what did you say?
Dipipato. Dipipato.
On a tangent view, isn't it?
Dipipato. One attained to vision, to view. What does that mean?
Stream winner?
Mm-hmm. Something like that, yeah. Something like, some person does not contact with the body and abide in those liberations at a peaceful and immaterial transcending forms, but some of his defilements are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom, and he has reviewed and examined with wisdom the teachings proclaimed by the Tathagata. Okay? So he is an Aryan, destroyed some of these, either stream entry or once returner, non returner, and does not have the formless attainments, but does have wisdom and has contemplated with wisdom the teachings of the Buddha. Okay? This is at Dipipato. So these, the detailed version of these is in the Kitagiri Sutta, which is going to be in a few weeks' time. Okay, next one. Sadha vimutto. Sorry? Liberated by faith, yeah. And what does it mean? Who does it refer to? No. Not the same as a faith follower. It's a sadhanusari down here.
Different.
Sadha vimutto up here.
Perhaps it could be a stream winner because the stream winner has faith in the triple gem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So they're basically a similar, an Aryan of some kind, who does not have formless attainments, and his faith is planted, rooted, and established in the Tathagata.
Okay. As opposed to the other one, the contemplative.
That's right. Yeah, the other one's a cynical, skeptical type. Sorry? He's always asking gnarly questions and won't believe anything and always has to have a reason for everything. And this one goes, You both get there in the end. Yeah? So either way, you can have those faculties and foremost, and both of them is fine. The difference between, what's the difference between them? Like, apart, we know what that basic difference is, but practically speaking, what's the difference between them?
The one with wisdom is hard to attain samadhi, the one with faith is easy to attain samadhi.
Yeah, that's one difference. Right, anything else?
Faith one and strong wisdom.
A faith follower is a lot happier.
Faith follower is happier, yeah. But?
Because you're liberated, not following.
That's the difference
in the
following.
That's the next one. They would all have faith, yeah.
Because once you know the truth of the Almighty, you have faith like that.
Absolutely. They'd all have faith, so again, it's just a matter of emphasis, yeah. Not a matter of difference in kind. Here we have the same distinction, but this is the one who's on the path to stream entry now, the Dhammanusari, Sadhanusari. Okay? So Dhammanusari again is one who's on the path to stream entry, and so they're defined as, find it, Pitagiri Sutta. Dhammanusari is, does not contact with the body and mind in those formless attainments. His taints are not yet destroyed by seeing with wisdom. And those teachings, but those teachings proclaimed by the Tathagata are accepted by him after reflecting on them sufficiently with wisdom. Okay? Furthermore, he has these qualities: faith faculty, energy, mindfulness, samadhi, and wisdom. This is called a Dhamma follower. Alrighty? And a faith follower is exactly the same, except instead of saying, the teachings proclaimed by the Tathagata are accepted by him after reflecting on them sufficiently with wisdom, it says he has sufficient faith in and love for the Tathagata. Okay, so again, it's a different sort of the intellectual versus the emotional approach to practice. Okay, and then one of the main differences between them is that the one who has the faith follower is more fun, but is also more dangerous. Yeah? Because it's very easy to, because if you don't have so much wisdom, it's very easy to put your faith in the wrong place. Yeah? And so if you're kind of lucky enough or have enough intuition or whatever, and you put your faith in the right place in the beginning, then it can be quite easy. You just sort of whoom along and everything's fine. But if you put your faith in somebody who turns out to be not quite as enlightened as you might have wanted them to be, then you're in trouble. Yeah? And the big problem, of course, is that there are a lot of people who exploit that, yeah? Who know that actually it's very easy to get a lot of followers by pulling a few certain kinds of tricks, which you can sort of say to people when they come and see you. And you can say things like, oh, it's very important that you come to see me today. Or you can say, it's when someone comes to see you the first time, you can say, oh, it's wonderful to see you again. Or these kinds of things. And you can kind of drop these kinds of things casually into the conversation and create a certain kind of impression and get lots of faith followers to come and have lots of faith in you.
But you can tell when you have a good teacher.
Faith followers always think that, yeah.
But you confess that.
And you should.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we didn't. Did we answer what the actual liberated by faith was?
It's an Aryan who has faith in the formless. Formless
okay.
Faculty.
An Aryan.
Yeah, non-Nahat.
Yeah. Non-Nahat.
Okay, so all those liberations, they don't refer to, like the moment they're liberated, they all, this is just like my mind thinking, I don't know if it's useful to ask, but when they get liberated, is that liberation all the same for all those different types of Aryans, and what they describe as liberated by faith, liberated by other stuff, it just describes overall their type of minds, like the type of characteristics or something, or their aspects, but the moment of liberation, is it all the same?
Liberation is the same.
So they're just talking about how they got to that liberation?
Yeah.
Except for in the cases of the ones who are not arahants, right? There's this distinction between the ones who are arahants and the ones who are not.
Yeah, and in that case, the saddha vimuto, the one freed by faith, that's obviously a lesser meaning of liberation there. The same word is used. Okay, but even though it's a lesser meaning, it's the same basic thing. Okay? The liberation is still the same. It's not complete yet. Okay, so this is always the case. Because liberation is just liberation. It's just letting go, basically. And if you've let go, you've let go. Right? You might be holding on to something. One person might let go because they think, I don't want to hold on to that, and they let go of it. Someone might let go because someone says you should let go of it, and they let go of it. But in both cases, they're not holding on to it anymore.
So it's that thing that keeps them in that, not drag them, but
that little
thing that moves them along the path to letting go.
Yeah, yeah.
Let go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And other people go, let go. Why should I?
the letting go, you've let go, but it can come back, can't it?
It can come back?
I don't know, I'm asking.
No.
It can come back, you're not worried.
No, I let go of my car for 2 months. I don't let it go anymore.
Do you remember? Do you remember?
Came back.
That might need a bit of thinking about that one.
Do you remember the other week we did the underlying tendencies?
Yeah.
You've got an underlying tendency for a little red car.
Yes. But I did let go. I honestly let go for 2 whole months.
Which is great.
Gone.
Little
okay, next. What do you think, Bhadali? On that occasion, were you one liberated in both ways, or one liberated by wisdom, or a body witness, or one attained to view, or one liberated by faith, or a Dhamma follower, or a faith follower? No, Bhante. Bhadali, on that occasion, were you not empty, hollow, and mistaken?
Wrongdoer in the old translation. This one has various different.
Does it? Which one's the old one? Is this the new one or the old one?
You've got the new one.
You've got the new one. My old one says wrongdoer.
The wrongdoer.
Hollow.
Nanu tuang bhadali tasming samaye rito tucho aparadhoti. It's pretty heavy. I mean, he hasn't just admonished him once, he's several times. And said, yes, again, he's confesses, I like a fool blundering and confused. Now, this, I don't know, are there any other places where someone had to keep on saying this again and again? Usually just once, and it was okay. I mean, even Ajatasattu murdered his father, and he only had to confess once.
But in the case of Brajika
1,
mm-hmm.
The Buddha
went on a bit.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Maybe this is, you know, because of the 3 months.
Maybe, yeah, he was okay.
Helping it.
Next. Paragraph 14. Here, Bhadali, some bhikkhu does not fulfill the training in the teacher's dispensation. He considers thus. Suppose I were to resort to a secluded resting place. A vibhittang senasana. That is to say, a forest. Aranya. A rukamula, a root of a tree. A babada, a mountain. A kandara is a ravine. It's like what we've got here, isn't it? A kandara. A giriguhang, hillside cave. A susana, charnel ground. Wanapatang, a forest thicket in the open air or in a heap of straw. Suppose I might realize a superhuman state of distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. What does that mean?
Become enlightened.
A noble distinction.
It's a Uttari Manasa Dhamma.
Yes, I know what the Pali is. There's it up there.
It's at least the first jhana.
Least first jhana?
Yes. Least first jhana up into all the attainments, including psychic powers.
Is that right? Are you like, you're just letting him ask all the questions.
That's one of the vineyard rules, right?
Sorry?
In the vineyard,
that's
the monk, if they say
that's right, right, yeah, yeah.
They're not a monk anymore.
That's right, yeah.
If they lie.
Yeah, if they lie.
That's right, yeah. So, yes, that's right. From first jhana up till arahantship. Any of those kinds of attainments? That vipassana and jnanas are okay. You can boast as much as you like about them. They're not. Okay. Okay. He resorts to some such secluded resting place while he lives thus withdrawn. The teacher senses him. Wise companions in the holy life who have made investigations censure him. God censure him, and he censures himself. Being censured in this, that's pretty heavy, isn't it?
Everyone,
even the gods are up there criticizing. Here I am, I'm just sitting here meditating in my cave, and the gods are up there criticizing me for it.
And himself is criticizing.
So this is what it's like for someone who does not fulfill the training.
Yeah.
Okay, so even though you might go and do all the right things, you're going in seclusion and meditating, but if you haven't fulfilled the kriya, that is, you're not keeping your precepts and so on, then you'll be criticized.
Well, he ate too much. He had that extra meal.
He's somebody who does fulfill the training, he withdraws to a suitable place, and then he does realize a superhuman Dhamma. Quite secluded from sensual pleasures, quite secluded from unwholesome states. He enters in a Savitakang Savicharang Viveka Jantiti Sukhang Patamang Jhanang Upasampadja Viharati. Okay, so here he gets into the first jhana. And of course, this is confirming what we were just saying. This is what the Upinusa Dhamma refers to. Does someone want to give me a word by word commentary on the first jhana for me?
In karma, the world, karma is the essential, secluded from unwholesome, unskillful things, with vitaka, with vichara, secluded, with pleasure.
Viveka jhang. Born of seclusion.
The
jhang is from jha, from birth. Yeah.
One ordains in the first jhana.
And having ordained in the first jhana, one abides in it.
What is Pataman jhana? First
jhana, yeah. Patamang jahanang upasampadya viharati.
Why is it a superhuman?
Why is it superhuman? Because he can fly through the air like Superman or something like that. A sensible answer for once, Sujato. Why is it superhuman? Actually, it's not really superhuman. No. The Pali grammarian's got it wrong. Uttaring manusa dhamma, yeah? It actually should be broken up, and it is some places, but correctly should be broken up to uttaring, and that gives us a variant reading there. I don't know if we can look down here and see the variant reading. Have we got the variant reading there? Okay, it's actually uttaring manusa dhamma.
Instead of uttaring manusa dhamma.
So that makes it perfectly clear, right? No, perhaps not. Okay. When we translate it as superhuman dhamma, which is the usual translation, and it's the kind of the easiest translation to put it in English, right? Then it sounds like the super, which is uttari. You see, this is super, this is human, this is dhamma, right? So it sounds like if you translate a superhuman dhamma, it sounds like the super belongs with the human. So you've got superhuman, right? Actually, that's not how it, grammatically it breaks up. Grammatically it should break up like this, which means uttari means beyond, yeah? Manusa dhamma meaning the principles which are relevant or pertaining to the human realm. Okay, so usually what that means is that they are the dhammas which get you reborn in the human realm. So this, for example, would be the dasa kusala kammapada, the 10 pathways of wholesome action. Yeah, so normally it's understood that if you do the dasa kusala kammapada, 10 ways of wholesome action, then that's minimum necessary requirement to get reborn in the human realm. Yeah. And so this is higher than those things. So it's higher, basically higher than ordinary, everyday, wholesome stuff, is what it means.
You're going into another realm, world.
Yeah, because it obviously gets you reborn in the Brahma realm. Yeah. Oh, okay. Next, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, and so on and so forth. Then he recollects his past lives.
One thing.
Yeah?
So, being reborn in Brahma realm is only for ones who are skilled, like we can, whenever they want, get into the state. But when they die, they might have a desire for any worldly things that don't get. Is that how?
No, I don't think you have to be particularly skilled to get in. That would obviously make it more stable and long-lasting. But I think the point is that jhanas are such a powerful state of mind that they would usually overpower any kind of sense sphere karma. There's actually a statement by that to that effect in the suttas, that any limited karma, because they are unlimited state of mind, so any limited karma can't overpower them. So normally, if you get jhana, even if you get just one jhana, I think that normally you would get reborn in the Brahma realm. Although obviously you might not be born for as long or whatever like that. But that's not to say it's an absolute rule. But that's normally that would be the case.
But then they go back because they have to practice Dhamma again,
right? Yeah, you can get enlightened in that realm as well. If you know the Dhamma already. Okay. So again, I won't go through all of these passages unless somebody's got a special request, because these are standard passages we've discussed many times in the sutta classes. So if anyone has a particular request, please speak forth. Otherwise, I'll just gloop over the top of them. So recollecting past lives, seeing the divine eye, seeing beings born and reborn according to their karma, and then finally the asavanang kaya jnanaya, okay, of the defilements, the knowledge of the body of defilements, is that right?
How
do we
pass for people taking
out this as well? You have to ask them about that. You have plenty of time. We've got some friends from the Goenka Centre coming for the rain center. You can ask them all the questions, okay? Alrighty? Okay, very good.
I'm asking, is this jnana, is this one of the ones that we pass the people use?
Actually, basically. It is. It is, yeah.
Not in Goenka.
Asava Kaya jnana?
I've never heard of
jnana in Goenka. They never talk about jnanas, do they?
No, it's Mahasi.
Mahasi. Oh, yeah. Well, it's actually from the Sutti Magga. What do they have?
What do they talk about?
Yeah, they must talk about like stages of insight. In terms of they must, you know, have like a series of developments of insight or something. No? No. No, there you go. But it is one of the Vipassana jnanas. I can't remember if it's called by the same name, it might be called by something different.
Could you repeat in English? Just to like
what? What, in Cockney or in
no,
what?
What you said?
What would you like me to repeat?
Just the last two minutes of what you said in English. Before the
I think
she wants you to
like
what Buddha said here in English.
The distraction of the defilements are destroyed. So now we've gone through the four jhanas and now the recognition of past lives,
yes.
Knowledge of passing away and reappearance of being, mm-hmm. And now the ending of defilements, the final one of the three knowledges. Okay. So these are taught as an example of the Uttarimanusa Dhammas. Is that clear? Yeah? Okay. that
do all arahants have the three knowledges?
Do all arahants have the three? That's an interesting kind of question. Possibly not.
At least the last one.
Yeah. Thereupon, the Venerable Bhadali asked, "Venerable sir, what is the cause? What is the reason why they take action against some bhikkhu here by repeatedly admonishing him? Go nuko ante hetu. What's the cause? Go pachayo. What's the condition? Pavaiha bhavaiha karanang karanti. Repeatedly admonishing him. What is the cause why they, what is the reason why they do not take such action against some bhikkhu here by repeatedly admonishing him?" And the Buddha replies, "Here, Bhadali, some bhikkhu is a constant offender with many offences. Abhihannahapati kohoti apati bahulo. When he's corrected by the bhikkhus, he prevaricates." Prevaricates. Anye nanyang papi charati. And this says precisely this and that and goes round and round. I think that's exactly what it says. Good. Anyway, Bahidha Katang Apanameti, he leads the talk aside. Okay? He shows disturbance and anger and bitterness. He does not proceed rightly. Na lomang pateti, he does not pat his hair. No? Loma is the hairs, because the hairs all usually lie down in one direction. So you've got to go anuloma, is to go anulom. You go along the hairs, and to go patiloma is against the hairs. So in English you say with the grain or against the grain. In Pali you say with the hair or against the hair. Mm. Okay. Where are we now? Yeah. He doesn't comply. He doesn't clear himself. He does not say, "Let me so act that the sangha will be satisfied." Okay. The bhikkhus taking account of the matter think it would be good if the venerables examine this bhikkhu in such a way that this litigation against him is not settled too quickly. Okay? And this is a bit what I was talking about before, about the manner in which you undertake the vinaya procedures. They're not just automatic. And the bhikkhus examine that bhikkhu in such a way that litigation against him is not settled too quickly. Okay? So in other words, you kind of you think that this monk really needs a bit of going at, and so you sort of draw it out a little bit to make it a bit more difficult for him.
Yeah?
But here, some bhikkhu is a constant offender with many offences. When he's corrected by the bhikkhus, he does not prevaricate, leave the talk aside, or show the servant paid. He proceeds rightly, he complies, he clears himself, and he thinks, "Let me so act that the bhikkhu, the sangha will be satisfied." Bhikkhus taking account of this matter think it would be good if the venerables examine this bhikkhu in such a way that this litigation against him is settled quickly. And the bhikkhus examine that bhikkhu in such a way that litigation against him is settled quickly. Okay? Kippameva Rupasamati. Here some bhikkhu is a chance offender without many offences, but when the litigation is pursued, then he objects and is difficult, and so they settle it not quickly. But somebody's a chance offender with many offences, and when the bhikkhus examine him, the litigation against him is settled quickly when he corrects him. So the point of this sequence is that if it's not so important even how many offences somebody has, but what their attitude is when they're admonished, yeah, is the important thing. And if you have a good attitude when you're pulled up for your offences, and if you show a good desire to correct yourself, and if you say, "Okay, that was right, I'll whatever you want me to do, I'll do what's necessary," and then monks should take account of that and should try to just smooth things over as quickly as they can. Okay? Whereas if someone's continuing to be obstinate and stubborn and so on, then they kind of draw it out and make it a bit painful for them. Here, some bhikkhu progresses by a measure of faith and love. Saddhamattang pemamattang. Okay. Saddhamattakena vahati pemamattakena. Okay. These are the same qualities that was mentioned above with the Sadhanisari. He has a measure of faith and love for the Buddha. So this word matta is an interesting word. It's translated as measure. It literally means like an amount or something like that. And it's the same word. You find it in quite a few different contexts. It's the same word that you find in the Saripatthana Sutta, where it says, Yava deva jnana mattaya patisati mattaya. Only one practices this Saripatthana only for a measure of knowledge and a measure of mindfulness, something like that. And it's also the same word that's found very famously in the later school of Buddhism that they often call the Citta Matra school, which is usually translated as the mind only school. Okay? But you can see here that we have here Saddha Matta, Pema Matta. Obviously it doesn't mean only. It doesn't mean he has only. It just means he has limited or a restricted amount. But this word Citta Matra is what they often call the mind-only school in Tibetan and so on. And it's sort of related to this thing, the excuse me, I'm just trying to get a few random keys here until I get a critical mark. Where is it? Hello? Haven't used this particular one for a while. Ah, there we go. Look it under. Why? Yeah, what's going on? Mm-hmm. It's very weird. Vijñapti-matra. But actually, probably the earliest form of the word is not chittamatra at all, but is vijñapti-matra, where the pitti bit here, this is from vijñana, okay, so they use chittamatra is often regarded as synonym with vijñana. Matra. Matra. Okay. And it's translated as mind only, and it's said to be a school that believes that only the mind is real and nothing out there exists. Okay? That's how it's presented. And maybe that's what it means. But probably the earliest form of the word is Vijñapti Matra, which was used by Vasubandhu. And in this particular formation, the pitti bit, or the apti bit, is actually a causative form. And so what that means is mere makings of consciousness. Okay? Mere makings of consciousness. Okay? Which is a bit very different thing from saying that mind only, yeah? So what this is saying is that mind is the cause, yeah? Which of course is straight from the early suttas also say that mind is the cause. So here, by the leaving out of this little pitti bit, it seems to have changed the meaning of the thing. But anyway, just the main point of this was to show you an idiom, because this is quite an important idiom, the matta or matra idiom, and it doesn't mean only, it means mere, okay, or a measure of, or just a bit, something like that.
They didn't have the whole Chinese school on the mistranslation.
Yeah, and the Tibetans as well. And then if you have a good example of it is when you go begging for alms. If you want to promise somebody, say, please make me a nice, good quality robe, and I'll give you even a little bit of alms food as a present.
Even as much as matta.
Yeah, vindabhata matta, vindabhata. So I'll give you even a little bit of alms food as a present. Okay, so this is what
it
means, just a little
can
bit.
Can you do what is it, mere makings of consciousness, a little example? What's a mere making of consciousness?
What's a mere making of consciousness?
You only see with a little bit of your eye?
No, everything. the world is a mere making of consciousness. The world as you experience it.
That's all it is. It's a mere making of consciousness.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, because your mind is involved with that as a causative force. Alrighty. What else we got? Okay. Blah, blah, blah. Suppose... Okay, so Bhikkhu progresses by a measure of a limited amount, even just a bit of faith and love. Then, if we were to let him not lose that little bit of faith and love, as he may do if we take action against him by repeatedly admonishing him. Suppose a man had only one eye, then his friends and companions, his kinsmen and relatives would guard his eye, thinking, let him not lose his one eye. So too, some bhikkhu progresses by mere faith and love. Okay? So this is quite a nice little reminder also for us that if somebody's weak in the Dhamma, then we shouldn't be too harsh on them. Okay? Now, Venerable Sir, what is the cause, what is the reason why there were previously fewer training rules and more bhikkhus became established in final knowledge? What is the cause, what is the reason why there are now more training rules and fewer bhikkhus become established in final knowledge? Okay, so what does that mean? Does that mean that it's because there are more training rules, that's why there's less enlightened monks?
You haven't got time to get enlightened.
Yeah, you've got to spend all your time studying the Vinaya, and you're always worried all the time. Oh my God, did I walk into the sala today with wet feet? Oh, and then you're always worried about it, and then you don't know. Is that right?
Wet feet.
Or dirty feet.
Is that right?
Well, somebody could be saying that right now, couldn't they?
The first month just like you can pass with it. And then they came so fast that they're kind of that how it works.
You get all the hoi polloi coming on. Something like that, yeah. Present company accepted, of course. That is how it is, Bhadali. When beings are deteriorating and the true Dhamma is disappearing, that is your higher mindism, then there are more training rules and fewer bhikkhus become established in final knowledge. The teacher does not make known the training rule for disciples until certain things that are the basis for defilements become manifest here in the Sangha. But when certain dhammas that are the basis for defilements become manifest here in the Sangha, so I should have said Sangha before, then the teacher makes known the training rule for disciples in order to ward off those things that are the basis for them. Okay? So only when the defilements appear, asavattaniya dhamma, then he will lay down a training rule. He will not lay down training rules unless the defilement appears, as we've seen in this particular sutta that we see. First of all, the Buddha's first teaching was just to encourage the monks. Okay, first of all, he said, you know, this is what I do, then you know, it's a good idea for you to do it as well. And then one of the monks said, I'm not going to do it. You know, and then showed that he was being deliberately stubborn and so on. And so then the Buddha laid down the training rule, but he didn't first of all lay down the training rule. Okay. Okay. Those things that are the basis for defilements do not become manifest here in the Sangha until the Sangha has reached greatness, mahatang, elsewhere used as a word for fatness. And until the Sangha has reached the acme of worldly gains. And here the word acme, which is familiar to all of us from
batteries.
The top of the eye.
Roadrunner, thanks. Yes. Roadrunner. Acme explosives company and all the rest of it. So acme is actually an Indo Aryan root meaning the peak. And here is the Pali version, Agga. There you go. So Roadrunner was a bit more literate than we might have given them credit for. Mm-hmm. Okay, so worldly gain, great gains, the acme of fame, Right, labha, yasa, bahu satcha, rattan yutan is much learning, and long-standingness. When it's got all of those things, then these defilements become manifest. Dania.
Sorry, the name to
you should put your hand up.
Huh? I don't know. It came out like, oh. I'm interested. Aga, and Ekagata, the peak of summer. Could you sort of relate how those... I remember it was explained, but I forgot the relationship between that, like in Ekagata, the peak,
the
summit, and Ekagata, the mind, the peak summit of mind, how that relates.
Something like that, yeah.
But that's all I know, like something like that.
It's
kind of fuzzy, vague.
It's fuzzy, vague. That can be all right. But basically that's what Aga means. Because in the phrase ekaga, it has both the meaning of like a point, so one-pointedness of mind, but that point is also like the peak of the mind. Yeah? So, because it's like the point, the peak of a mountain. Yeah? And so this is where everything comes together. So again, you can understand it like where everything comes together. Like if you've got different people climbing the mountain, they might come all different ways. When they get there, they're all in one spot. Like the all-seeing eye on the pyramid.
So it also means one peak, one pointed.
The eye on the pyramid?
Yeah, the US,
US dollar bill.
Something
like that, yeah. That's what they're really talking about. That's why the pyramids have four sides for the four tana. Alright? Yeah? Okay. Next. So is that what's going on here? Isn't that good? Isn't that good for the Sangha to have stuff? And be famous? Don't we want the Sangha to be famous? Great learning and long standing renown?
Yes.
But then those who have no other way of life, or those who find fame and those things attractive, come along.
So, but Sangha's better off to not have much gains.
Well, if you're a poor little lot, he'll come.
And also those things corrupt
you. Well, maybe it's nice to have some really acmes. And some not so acmes.
And some not so acmes, yeah. I think one of the points of this is that sometimes you can't help it. And you can't always control these conditions. And so this is why the training rules are there, because they're to deal with the situation when that comes. But if you don't have the vinaya rules, then when those things happen, then it's basically pretty much a free-for-all. Yeah? But if you have the vinaya rules, then at least you've got some control over the sangha, and you can tell the good ones from the bad ones and these kinds of things. Yeah? So this is why... Yeah. Okay. There were few of you on that occasion when I taught an exposition of the Dhamma through the simile of the young thoroughbred colt. Do you remember that, Bhante? No, Bhante. Oh, to what reason do you attribute that? Bhante, you're rubbing it in here, isn't it? I have long been one who did not fulfill the training in the teacher's dispensation. That is not the only cause or the only reason, but rather by encompassing your mind with my mind, I have long known you thus. When I am teaching the Dhamma, this misguided man does not heed it, does not give it attention, does not engage it with all his mind, does not hear the Dhamma with eager ears.
He's not worth much, is he? Badali.
Poor old Badali. Still Badali, I will teach you an exposition of the Dhamma through the simile of the young thoroughbred colt. Right. Suppose, Madali, a clever horse trainer obtains a fine thoroughbred colt. He first makes him get used to wearing the bit, while the colt is being made to get used to wearing the bit. Because he's doing something that he's never done before, he displays some contortion, writhing, and vacillation. But through constant repetition and gradual practice, he becomes peaceful in that action. Okay? Okay, so some contortion, visukayitani, visayitani, vipanditani. So after his practice, he becomes peaceful in that action, which is Tasmin tane parinibbuto hoti. Literally translate, right in that place he becomes fully in, attains final nibbana. So this has been quite nice, giving you an ordinary language usage of nibbana or parinibbana. So, when the court has... Sorry?
How did nibbana come into the cult?
It's not mentioned.
I must have just done listening and so stuff.
I've long known you to be one either. When the Dhamma is being taught, you have no. You, of course, you do. You lend an ear and engage it with all your heart. I know you do. Parinibbuto, Bhikkhu Bodhi translated as becomes peaceful in that action. But actually, the Pali is tasmin tane parinibbuto hoti. Right in that place, he attains final nibbana. When he's become peaceful in that action, the horse trainer then makes him used to wearing the harness. When the colt is being made used to wearing the harness, because he's doing something he's never done before, he displays some contortion, writhing, and vacillation, but through constant repetition and gradual practice, he becomes peaceful in that action. When the colt has become peaceful in that action, the horse trainer further makes him act in keeping in step, in running in a circle, in prancing, in galloping, in charging, in the kingly qualities, in the kingly heritage. Well, it would be difficult to translate it if it said something like, you know, we made him prance in the queenly qualities. It wouldn't quite take a bit of rewording. I could have used royal qualities. His Rajaguna Rajavangsa. Okay. In the highest speed, in the highest fleetness, and in the highest gentleness. Uttame Jave.
Well, that could be the female part.
It could, but it's not. Yes, this is the Javana. You know, if you know from there, your Abhidhamma, the Javana Chitta is the running Chitta. Uttame Haye, which I haven't got a clue what it means, the highest fleetness. Haye, there you go. Uttame Sakalye. It's an interesting word, that one. Sakalye. Gentleness. And again, while he's been trained, he displays some problems, but afterwards he becomes peaceful in that action. When the colt has become peaceful in that action, the horse trainer further rewards him with a rubbing down and a grooming. Okay. When a fine thoroughbred colt possesses those 10 factors, he's worthy of the king, in the king's service, and considered to be one of the factors of the king. Okay. So too, Gardali, when a bhikkhu possesses 10 qualities, he is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, and unsurpassed field of merit for the world. Okay, so all of these things he is worthy of. Ahuneyo, pahuneyo, dakyuneyo, anjali karaniyo, anuttaram punya ketang lokasa. What 10? Here, the bhikkhu is endowed with the right view of the one beyond training, the aseka, meaning the arahant, of course, sometimes translated as adept. He is endowed with the right intention, samasankapa, of the adept, with the right speech of the adept, with the right action, the right livelihood, the right effort, the right mindfulness, and the right samadhi of the adept. It's the first factors of the noble eightfold path. Okay, up to there. Then we have the two remaining factors of the tenfold path, endowed with the right knowledge of the adept and with the right release of the adept, samanyana and the samavimutti. Okay, so this is of course referring to the tenfold path.
The eightfold path ripens in the last two.
This is more or less saying that that's pretty rare. This beyond training all the time?
Well, it's an arahant. So how rare, depends how rare arahants are.
Well, they seem to be far between.
Few and far between?
Few and far between. Now,
we don't know that.
Well, I think I know one or two.
One or two. Takes on to know one. That's what the Buddha said exactly. So. These ten factors. So basically, the interesting thing about the ten factors is if you put them in a, if you make it a bit clearer by putting them in a bit of a list at here. So you've got a bit of a list here. Let me get rid of this bit so you can see it there. And then you can see the list of factors down the middle there. Right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right samadhi, right knowledge, right release. You can even isolate these a bit more. Oops. Like that. So you can see them more clearly. Okay, so these particular factors, and basically what's happening, you can see the kind of the process of it is you start out with right view, which is of course a right theory. Dikti is an opinion, and then that leads you, it shapes your intention, and then shapes your actions of speech and so on, of sila, and then it makes you want to put effort into practice. Develop your mindfulness, and the outcome of developing mindfulness is right samadhi. And when you have right samadhi, that's the four jhanas, then you know and see things as they really are. Okay? And so what's happening then is that right view, which you had at the beginning, is now ripening in right knowledge. Okay? So with all those other factors culminating in right samadhi, and they come together, and then the right knowledge emerges. And originally the right knowledge is the knowledge of stream entry, although in this list it's more often these two put together, the knowledge and the release, and together they're the knowledge of arahantship and release of arahantship. Okay.
Bhante, right livelihood beyond training, but what could you possibly be doing?
What?
I mean, what is right livelihood? It taken to that Nth degree.
Oh, well, what it would mean is that you would accept any alms food without any thought of me or mine.
That's right, livelihood. Of course, that's how you live.
Yeah. Complete non-attachment with any requisites that are offered.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And can you mention the knowledge and release
It depends how you think about it, really. And there's a bit of ambiguity in the way that the sutta is presented. Normally, the knowledge and the release are presented together, and they are both the knowledge and release of arahantship. Okay? So I'm just getting these guys out of the way so you can see them a bit clearer. So, so normally it's a knowledge of release of arahantship. So in that case, the knowledge is precisely the knowledge that all the defilements are ended and there's no more rebirth. Okay, so that's the knowledge of arahantship. And the knowledge of freedom, of course, follows on for that. Yeah? So, but right knowledge also includes anywhere from the stream enterer on up. Okay, also has the right knowledge. Not the one on the path to stream entry, but the stream enterer. Right? And so they could also, in a more limited sense, be said to have that right knowledge.
And liberation.
Mm-hmm.
Liberation.
What?
The last one, release.
Yeah. What about it?
Right liberation.
What about it? Is right liberation?
Yeah,
it's right. It is, right. Right on. It's cool liberation, yeah. So and the stream enterer also, of course, is released to a certain degree. You know, they're released from rebirth in the lower realms and so on and so forth. So it applies again in a limited way to them, but fully to the...
But isn't
like
the release the same for all of them? It's just like the momentum or something like that?
Yeah, but not if you're not an arahant, then the release is not to the same degree, yeah?
No. The vision of the Dhamma is the same, right?
The vision of the Dhamma is the same, yeah. Understanding the Four Noble Truths is the same, yeah?
That's to what degree?
But you still haven't let go of all defilements. So you can't be completely free until you're free of defilements. How can you be free if you've got defilements?
These terms created by the Buddha.
Which terms?
The term Arahant, stream
enterer. Arahant seems to have been around before the Buddha, just as a general term for a perfected one. It may have been understood in different ways. Stream enterer, I'm not sure of that outside of a Buddhist context. It may have been a special term of the Buddha. Yeah. Stream enterer, once returner, non returner. I haven't encountered them out in non Buddhist context.
It seems like the language, the language at the time was ready to accept, you know, a lot of what he had to say.
Sure, yeah. Sure, and there was a lot of a great respect for freedom. I think that was probably the most important thing, that there was already this kind of prepared idea of vimokkha, vimutti, yeah, freedom, as a spiritual idea. They're pretty much the same, yeah.
They're both nouns,
and they're both from the same root, but they're formed in slightly different ways. They can get used a couple of times in slightly different idioms, but basically they have pretty much the same meaning. Okay. Alrighty.
Mm-hmm.
Any more questions?
Just like the yoga course and training and all that. You referred to like sila and then the sense restraint and all that gradual path. I guess that's
That's
just to confirm.
Yeah. Yeah, they use that quite a lot. The thoroughbred horse and the training and so on, and the Anguttara Nikaya and so on. It's quite a common teaching, so it must have been perhaps quite a familiar sight to see that kind of thing going on.
Yeah, and when Advent class says, you know, you saw the tiger in the cage,
you throw the tiger in the cage.
And then the tiger. At first, you know, he rebels, he shakes the cage, but then he just kind of
gives up. Yeah, that was fun.
He's making quiet. like the stick drying up.
Lots of similes talking about that kind of process. Yeah.
And the good thing is in the horses, if the teacher or the trainer isn't training it properly, it can go off and be a very bad thing to handle.
Really?
So it learns very bad manners and stuff, bad habits. So that, you know, that's like, I can see that where, you know, they're saying when it's trained properly, it's a bit of king reports, and that training keeps going by someone that knows how they're training that particular horse. They give someone else to train that horse, and it could really get some bad habits if they didn't know that they were coming.
That last phrase, Bhante, with the horse, and considered one of the factors of a king. How is that?
It's one of the things which a king has to have, basically. Otherwise, you know, like these days, you think, you know, if you're a government, you've got to have an air force and you've got to have a police force and all of these kinds of things. Well, one of the things you had to have as a king in those days was basically, as part of one of the sections of the army was the cavalry. So always the state was actually very dependent on horses for, not just in military usage, but also for communications and all kinds of things. Yeah. So that's one of the things you have to have.
That's where ballet came from.
Ballet?
I used to bring the horses into the court and walk them around. And the ballet step is.
Really? So it really is. It really is the queenly prancing.
And men do ballet too.
That's people who are like calves. That's the way that they show off their calves while they're walking around the court. It's very good.
Well, there you go. Whatever turns you on, I guess. Right. That's that. Let's finish with paying respects.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sangham.